Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pep Talks. And this is Eddie Pepitone and my buddy Steve Lally. Say hello, Steve.
And, hey, everybody.
We are lucky today, folks. We have a genuine badass comedian. And a lot of you folks, you just work in jobs where, I don't know, you go in and you drool on a desk and... You have ulcers that eat you out from the inside because you never pursued your dreams. We pursue our dreams, and the guy next to me is a badass comedian, and he does what you wanted to do with your life, but instead you wound up in a carpet store and you wound up in a carpet store in Ohio, yeah. And you know, it's anyway. Tom Rhodes, welcome, Tom Rhodes. That's so,
what a beautiful picture of your listeners you just painted. Everybody's working in a carpet store.
Wouldn't it be funny if all my listeners were just all Stevie and me's listeners are just these like guys who barely can get out of bed. Their dreams are shattered.
Drooling on their desks. In the little cubicle.
You know how you can see in offices who is the closest to suicide in an office cubicle?
A cat calendar?
That's very close. I was going to say...
Hang in there, and the cat's like...
Hang in there! I was going to say it's who has the most pictures of either their vacation or their family. Like, if you see, you know, someone sitting in a cubicle and they have just, this is Hawaii, like 30 pictures of, you know.
I had a dentist when I first came to L.A. and in his
waiting. You don't have to brag. I also have a dentist.
In his waiting room, he had all of his vacation pictures and like. I thought that breeded resentment among the, you know, like, why do I got to look at this asshole on a boat in Hawaii?
Dentists are weird motherfuckers.
The dentists are fucking weird.
They are fucking weird, yeah. Man.
Can I tell you a story that I had a dentist?
Feeding blood to plants, things.
Oh, it's Little Shop of Horrors. See, I knew that. I got that.
Good reference.
How about
good.
Michael Palin in Brazil? Do you remember that?
Was he a dentist?
Was that, and then was it Marathon Man where he got...
Oh, yes!
Dustin Hoffman got the drill in the front tooth?
Yeah, Dr. Mengele.
Max von Sydow.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that was Olivier.
Oh, okay.
It's easy to mistake Sydow for Olivier.
All those old white fucking actors, actors.
Oh, you don't have to
see, we're men of a certain age. We can, you guys can slap down a Max von Sydow reference.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, you prick, that was Olivier.
Max von Sydow was Exorcist, right? It was Exorcist.
Yes. He was also in a Woody Allen movie that I loved. I think it was Hannah and Her Sisters.
Yeah,
Hannah.
He played the artist.
He played the artist, and he does it. Do you remember Hannah and Her Sisters?
No. I saw it, but I don't remember.
Oh, you don't remember? Yeah. I don't remember a lot.
They all kind of blend in. Was that... That's not the one
I'm going to throw a couple of
Barcelona.
Really...
That's the one where someone wants to fuck someone's wife. I just remember that.
Let me guess. There's an older guy, and he likes a younger girl.
No, he's married.
How did you know? How did you know that about Woody? Tommy... You have been... Does anybody call you Tommy? I've never...
Only very good friends.
Is that right? All right, I told you, I'll call you Thomas.
No, we've known each other
We've known each other.
How long have you guys known each other?
20 years, at least.
Is it that long?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Yeah, so so you can call me Tommy. You can't.
You have to call
I'd
him.
Feel strange.
Mr. Rhodes.
Mr. Rhodes. Wasn't that a show you had?
It was, yeah.
Okay, well, that would be shit. Appropriate then. That's appropriate.
Oh, shit. Now, that is true, man. Did you have long hair back then?
I did. I was skinny, had long hair, and yeah.
You've been through, and we talked about that a little.
Size 28-inch waist.
Did you ever have long hair, Eddie?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I love long hair. You know,
I like the sideburns, bro. You don't need
Yeah, that. I do up the sideburns sometimes, you know. But... watch my this. I just get a long distance stare. Oh yeah, I used to do up the sideburns. But I wanted to talk about Tom, who is a comic. And again, this goes to you folks out there whose dreams died on the vine. But Tom, dreams dying on a vine. Isn't that why we watch a lot. And by the way, I'm just kidding you folks. All of our dreams die on the vine.
Eddie, that should be
there's
a song.
Nothing wrong with carpet stores.
No, there's nothing wrong with
cat calendars are perfectly fine. It's not a cry for help.
I'd rather be in a carpet store than a cubicle. I'll just say
that's
that.
True.
I'd rather be stuck in a carpet store than a cubicle.
Yeah.
If you got to choose, if those were the two hells you had to choose between.
Yeah.
There's
you can wear rollerblades around the warehouse, things like that.
Right,
you
know, right. Make it fucking fun. Off when the boss is away.
Yeah.
You know, but the fucking cubicle with the fluorescent lighting, it draws all the vitamins out of your body. That's suicide. That's fucking. Kill yourself and others quickly.
Can I tell you the last office job I had, to just show you how long ago it was in the World Trade Center.
Stop.
Wow.
I was in the World Trade Center, and it was, I mean, I'm such a fuck up when it comes to anything corporate or organized. And I had to look up, the gig was, I was a temp. And I also do this, folks, so you can feel like, you know, I can relate to you. You know, because usually my life is one of endless creativity and a lot of sex. but I had to look up, I was given a huge hotel brochure. Hotels were listed. I forget the listing. And find out if they still exist. And it was so disorganized. What I wound up doing after day three, and it was a two-week job, is I pretended to do it. And I would just say, this one does, without checking anything, I would just sit at my desk. And it was before the internet, not to brag, that I lived life before the internet. I didn't need anything.
How old were you then, Eddie?
I was three. My dad put me to work
as a
toddler.
I'm walking around with cassette tape, so you don't talk about before the internet.
That's true. You know, I didn't even realize. Tom handed me a cassette, The Wisdom of Malcolm X, and that's the kind of guests I get. I get people who listen to Malcolm X, white people who listen to Malcolm X. By the way,
it's a cassette of his speeches. When I lived in San Francisco years ago.
I didn't think it would be a cassette of him puttering around the house. I don't know. I don't know what you're doing.
Just gardening tips. You know, when you're trying to keep birds of paradise at summer peak.
I will not have a white lily.
I lived in this. It was a black neighborhood when I lived in San Francisco. Now it's been gentrified. But
oh, that's there a were all shocker. That's a shocker.
Great little militant. Kiosk shops and I bought that years ago, and it's all his speeches and anti-white rhetoric always calms me down.
I love how you handed it to him and it was empty.
Well, because it's still in the Sony Walkman thing.
If you didn't explain that, it could have been just a fucked up metaphor for.
I had an interesting ride over with this Syrian driver. I was listening to Malcolm
you took
X.
A cab.
I took a Lyft.
Yeah.
And then I took it out, and then because I didn't know the route the guy was taking, and he was like, "What are you listening to?"
Did he say that to
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and then he
was he cool?
Muslim young guy from Syria.
Cool dude.
Escaped Assad.
From Syria?
Yeah, from Syria.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't know the story of Malcolm X.
Oh, that, nice.
The amazing thing of his life, where he was, you know, kill whitey, and he didn't want blacks and whites together. And Martin Luther King Jr. was like, you know,
he was a pimp, wasn't
peaceful.
He?
Well, originally, yeah, Detroit Red was his.
Wow, I didn't know that. That
was his. He was a pimp and a drug dealer.
Right.
He used to ride the train from New York. He worked on the train from New York to Boston and was running drugs and stuff.
Oh shit!
And then he becomes, you know, Nation of Islam guy.
Right.
But he went to you know, and he was like, you know. Very much a kill whitey.
Do you think they killed him? His own.
The Nation of Islam killed him.
Why did they kill him?
Well, because the Elijah Muhammad, his mentor, was kind of fucking around with young girls in the Nation of Islam and doing some other unsavory things that Malcolm X kind of, you know. Well, he didn't call him out, but it tarnished his image of his hero. And then the big transformative moment in his life was when he went to Mecca for his Hajj, and he prayed next to white Muslims, and he realized that there might be a couple of decent white people. And that's when he came back and realized that, you know, we're all God's children, and that, you know, this, he was wrong about his anti-whitey stance.
Fascinating.
So, I mean, the guy's life is pretty amazing. But the tape I have is still very much Kill Whitey.
And I love that it calms you down.
It calms me.
Because I was talking about panic attacks before we got on the air, and I usually have panic attacks in public, and it would be funny if the only thing that calmed me down was Malcolm X, like,
you
orating.
Should try it.
Against white men.
You know,
like,
the thing about
I need Malcolm X. Like I'm
I need
airport.
My I need my ex.
Somebody,
no more Klonopin. You
here's
just
a
put
Xanax,
on
sir.
Malcolm X.
Here's a Xanax. No. Malcolm X. Malcolm X. But Tom, I want to talk to you also about the fact that I'm going to Amsterdam.
Fun
playing
city.
Tumblers, and you live there. Tom had a show there. Talk about that for a sec.
I have a deep, long history with the Netherlands. I think it's there's so much to tell you about before your trip. The number one thing that you should know is Tumler is the oldest, best comedy club of Amsterdam. And it is probably one of the greatest names for a comedy club ever.
It is. Is that a Jewish
word? Tumler is a Jewish Yiddish word, which means traveling merrymaker. Back in, you know, the days when there were Jewish ghettos all over Europe and you know, Jews were the poor side of town, there were these guys that traveled from ghetto to ghetto, and they had funny songs, they had jokes and stories, and they were traveling merrymakers. They were tumblers.
Yeah.
And
I love that name,
and,
too. You know, Steve is versed in Jewish.
I never heard of Tumler.
Oh, you never,
never
did?
Heard. And you're a Jew. Actually,
on,
by
I
technical.
So I think that's probably.
I don't want you saying that.
Not
on
when
the
you
air.
Go to Europe.
Oh my God, no one knew before now. it's probably one of the best names for a comedy club ever. It is kind of in the basement of the Amsterdam Hilton. There's the side, it used to be a jazz club, which was.
I've played it.
Which was mafia owned, and there was a murder, a mafia hit in there. Which
in Tumblers?
Once upon a time. I mean,
holy
the comedy
shit.
Store used to be Ciro's,
well,
which was a mafia-owned jazz club.
There was a
so,
murder
so
there.
So the, yeah, many.
And suicides.
There were many murders. That's why I think sometimes I have a bad set.
Yeah, definitely. It's
there's a bad vibe
it's,
sometimes.
It's some guy named Lefty hanging out in the rafters. But so Tumler, that... Jazz club closed, and then Tumor opened, and you know it's all Dutch comedy all year round, and in the summer they give the Dutch comedians a break to write new shows, and then they bring in the touring international acts, English and American, Irish, Australian, whoever, and then also this allows the Dutch comedians to go there and study from the masters. So it's pretty genius. And Tumler is, my life was transformed in that room.
Is that right?
Yeah, because the very first time I went to Amsterdam was to perform at Tumler.
Wow.
And I ended
Were
up...
Were you a sitcom star back then?
It was after my sitcom.
Okay.
So my sitcom was 96 to 97. I think the first time I went to Amsterdam was 98, 99. I think 99.
By the way, when I hear 98.
Yeah, it was 99.
When I hear 98, 99, I think, oh, that wasn't too long ago. But damn,
it
was 20 years ago.
Yeah. So I ended up falling in love with a waitress, a girl that worked at Tumler. And then she's now a very well-known actress in.
Can you tell us who or no?
Yeah, Anique Pfeiffer.
Who?
Anique Pfeiffer. She's done movies and TV and a lot of national theater and stuff. We're still friends. And
goes without saying.
But
he's bragging.
Why am I bragging?
No, because it's something Eddie says all the time. I'm just trying to tag Eddie's.
We're just fucking with you.
No,
you know,
I'm
just
telling you the story.
You know, you're interesting because you're a serious cat. Like, you have a serious. It's interesting.
He's listening to Malcolm X on the thing. He's obviously
maybe I should listen something more lighthearted.
You?
No, not at all. Not at all. But sometimes when I talk to you, and you'll do that kind of thing. Why is it? You'll go. You have a gravitas. You go. Why? What did you just say to Steve? Why is that? Why am I bragging? That's what I said.
Why is that bragging?
Yeah, but it was done with a like. you know, like a guy in Ciro's who's like, you got a problem.
So,
there is nothing to say to that.
Telling you the story of my life. So, I ended up moving to Amsterdam. I thought, you know, I lived in San Francisco.
The girl had a lot to do with that.
The girl is the reason why I moved to Amsterdam.
And love is why he moved. He has not been
love
laid.
Love is the reason to move anywhere.
He has not been laid since an accident. Throw that out there. Go ahead.
So, yeah, and it's funny, like, when, you know, people, you bring up Amsterdam and people are like, hookers and drugs. It's it's a wonderful progressive country, and the regular people there, you know, are well worth falling in love with. So,
It sounds like it's a Dutch Catskills, the Toomler's place. It's like a...
No, because the Catskills was old hacky comedians.
Oh, okay.
This is progressive.
But what you were saying was a place for young comics to come and learn from the masters, kind of a thing. And...
Yeah, but the Catskills was old mother-in-law jokes and things like that. This place is
cutting edge.
Cutting edge. Mm-hmm. And they're more on the alternative side of comedy than they are on, you know, hacky kind of... Catskill, Vegas-y type acts. So anyway, so I lived in Amsterdam for years, and for me, San Francisco for 7 years, and for me, San Francisco was my left-wing utopia, you know, because I grew up in Florida, my family are all conservative, hardcore Christian Republicans, and like, you know, a lot of Florida people where I grew up, and I started out on the Southern Circuit, so I moved to San Francisco because I wanted to be around gays and, you know,
I still
ethnicities.
Do. I still
and,
do.
And as do I. And
but he's from Brooklyn, so he was around a little more diverse.
You guys really make it hard to tell a story.
Oh. This is how we do it. This is Eddie's.
Yeah,
this is
true.
So
when I went to Amsterdam, I thought that it was San Francisco times 1,000. That the way San Francisco talks about being progressive and things like that, that, you know, it's still, things are not put into action the way they should be. And now it's, you know, San Francisco's changed dramatically. But the Dutch are progressive people. They're very much, they have a history of bringing war-torn immigrants to the Netherlands, which is great. I mean, you'll meet people from Iraq and Syria everywhere. And Amsterdam is like New York City if it was a small little village. You meet people from every corner of the world. Their political system is really interesting because it is a socialist democracy with a functioning monarchy. Wrap your brain around that.
The royal family
has political say in their system. And it's a socialist democracy. And here's the mind-blowing thing that I have tried to explain to my family endlessly. There are 3 Christian parties in the Netherlands. You have 16 different political parties. I think our 2-party system is completely wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And it's all corporate run and lobbyists. And it's our system is so fucked.
It's all money.
It's all money. And it doesn't represent.
Well, look at our country. It's on the verge of a civil war.
It is, and then now it's run by Putin and the Russians. But we got a soccer ball. Anyway, so let me finish the point that there's 3 Christian parties in the Netherlands. You have the Christian Right Party, which would be kind of like, you know, our Republicans, and then you have the Christian Left, which is the left wing. Kind of liberal-minded Christians. Imagine there being more than one flavor Christian. And then here you go. You've got the Christian Green Left Party. And these are the environmentally-minded Christians who are so left-wing, they think the Christian left is too far right for them.
I love it. And the left here is non-existent.
Yeah.
Well, actually...
I don't think it's up to the left now. Where is the Republican outcry over what's happening? Like Trump said that the European Union is our foe. A week ago he said Canada is our foe, and now North Korea and Russia are our allies?
I'll tell you why these motherfucking I'm going to tell you why.
Lay it on me.
Because they tolerate this administration because they make a fucking windfall. This tax cut that went through because of these right-wing scumbags, they fucking benefit greatly. And so they tolerate this guy. But yes, when he is now making enemies of quote unquote our allies. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're like going, what are you fucking doing?
The absolute trade war? Yeah, unnecessary trade war.
That's
and
right.
Like, and there's no outcry at the moment of people
saying... Well, he hijacked the party. The far right hijacked the Republican Party.
That's right.
So in order for the Democratic Party to exist and survive, they're going to have to move to the far left.
And they're not. They're assholes.
No, because they're fucking Republicans who like gay people.
That's right.
That's what they are. They're fucking solar panels.
That's a great way to put the Democrats.
Good point. Yeah.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
And Bernie Sanders gave him a chance. He gave him a chance and they fucked him. So now we're stuck with, and we'll see what they do if they roll out more of these corporate fucking Democrats to go against Trump. They're going to get, listen, the corporate media and the corporatocracy don't want us to know there's more than two, blue and red team. But really, there's a lot of different kinds of people in America.
What Tom was talking about, and I think what's great is that you have lived all over the world, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great to have that perspective. And even me, I mean, I don't even have a good like, it's just great to hear that there are three Christian parties and that there's a left of a left party.
There's a left of a left Christian party. And I mean, and then there's all those other, you know, progressive parties there, as well as the right wing. And it's just there's like 16 different parties because there are many different flavors of political opinion. And somehow, and it's a socialist country. My wife is from Rotterdam, which is the most ethnically diverse city in Europe. And it's kind of where a lot of their dark skinned immigrants are sent. And Rotterdam was obliterated in World War II, so it's a very modern city where once upon a time it looked identical to Amsterdam. So my wife is not from a wealthy family, and she got to go to Leiden University, which is the Harvard of the Netherlands. And she didn't have a student loan. It was a very reasonable tuition that she paid, like doable. And here's the beautiful thing about the Netherlands. A week ago, because my wife reads the Dutch news. That's where her primary news source is, the Dutch news sites and everything. So I hear her cheer in the living room, and I'm in the next room. I go, "What's up, babe? What happened?" She said, "The Netherlands just lowered the price of education for every citizen."
Recently?
So last week. So not only was it affordable, I forget what she paid, like a year. If it was like... To go to the best university, it's where the royal family of the Netherlands goes, is Leiden.
It's affordable to anybody.
It's affordable to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you have to have grades and things like that, but you can get into any university.
Wait a minute.
I think it...
You have to have grades? What kind of bastards are they?
So I don't know what she paid, but it was reasonable. And then also, every citizen has basic health care. They're covered. And just these... I mean, it's all about the sanctity of human life and making the best possible citizens, which is the opposite of us, where we think, you know, the dumber you are, the better you serve capitalism. And let's divide everybody. Let's cut up the fucking voting districts so that, you know, the poor people and the blacks, their votes don't count.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I think I have a good question.
We don't get the day off to vote, but we get President's Day off. That's what kills me about
the
United
States.
That's
really funny. Did you say that?
I've mentioned it on stage a few times. But like the most important day, the day we vote for president, is a Tuesday when like everyone has to work and poor people can't get that day off to go vote. And yet we get President's Day off. So
what's worse, they get off and the polls are still open, but they get there and they're standing in a 3-hour line and then it closes. And that shit happens all the time.
And poor people being purged from rolls.
Oh, well, that's
don't get me fucking started
on that.
Here's a question. After hearing all this, why the fuck are you living here?
Are you a citizen of Netherlands?
No. I married a Dutch woman. I mean,
live there.
Well, you know, I didn't. So I could, yeah. And I would like to end up. I love Europe, but I wanted to make my mark in my own country.
I understand.
And I love
that.
California.
Yeah.
And my wife loves California.
Oh, she does.
And so she's really the reason that we moved here, which actually turned out to be great timing because it is the golden age renaissance of comedy in Los Angeles right now. You know, there's just
kind of taking place at the Comedy Store or
all over. But I think primarily at the Comedy Store. I mean, every night is like, I mean, Chris Rock did a set last night. Chappelle when he's in town, Bill Burr when he's in town every night. Stanhope.
I miss Stanhope. Stanhope was last fucking week and I
missed
him.
At the store?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I wasn't around.
But it's Joe Rogan, Joey Diaz. Eddie Pepitone.
Yeah, that's true.
Pat Oswalt has been doing sets there recently.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
The best of American comedy.
I take it for granted.
So it's really great for me because I moved here 3 years ago. I had everything in storage for 10 years.
Oh, yeah, he was telling me.
So it was really interesting to get everything out of storage and see what I've been holding on to for all these years. That's, that's where I found, like, you know, Malcolm X cassette tapes and shit, you know, from my, past underground. But it's inspiring because, you know, you go to the Comedy Store and it's like, you know, it's not just pleasing the audience. You want to impress the comedians that are there. So, you know, you can't do the same shit all the time. And then you got to be bringing some high level intelligent thoughts. You know, not everybody takes that approach, but, I really love it.
You got that right, buddy. No, I know. I was just telling Steve that last night I had an off set. I was in the original room and I just, for me, the way I hook in, and I think you do this too, because you transform on stage. I have to have a certain energy. And I think you are like that too. You go, bam. You have a kind of, well, let me tell you, what's your stage voice? Can you do it now?
I mean, I just, I don't know.
It just transforms.
It's different than this.
It is. I mean, he probably wouldn't know it, but it's like, you kind of talk like
a black Southern preacher.
Yes.
I like to elongate the syllables and hit the consonants.
Oh, shit. You were friends with Mitch, weren't you?
I was friends with Mitch.
Yeah. Did he influence you or you influenced each other?
Because he started out in Florida too.
I was already in San Francisco when he
started. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And, Mitch was a good friend.
Mitch Hedberg, we're talking about, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Funny man.
Brilliant guy.
Yeah.
I got to open up for him in Birmingham at the Stardome when I first started. That was only been in a couple of years. And I got high with Mitch. Not anything, any kind of hard drugs. But I got high with Mitch, and I did a week of stand-up with him, and he was like, L.A. is okay, man. It's not too bad. You know, people give it a bad rap. I like sushi.
I like sushi. I
ended up coming here, partly because of that. So, but I started in Florida in college.
Where?
And I started with, like, Bob Shoemaker at the Coconut. This is back when you had to go, 90 miles to do an open mic.
Yeah, everybody started
between,
with Bob Shoemaker in Florida.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and he never paid any money.
No, even back then.
And then he still doesn't pay any money. And then I was home. I always go home at Christmas. My family's in Orlando.
Oh, that's right.
And then some of my best friends, you might know, Lou Angel Wolf and Kevin Rogers.
One of my best friends.
My oldest best friends in the world. So I always slip over and visit them over in Tampa, Clearwater, St. Pete area. And Bob, I was down there visiting them, and it just happened to be the night that Bob Shoemaker was having his annual Christmas party. And he has a very lovely home on the water and with a little boat.
He invites all his important friends.
But it's funny that, that's where the money went. The guy never paid any money to anybody. And then it's like, of course he has a beautiful home right on the water.
Yes. Tom, we have to take a break and do an ad. We have... we have a lot of great sponsors, and we have a couple of new ones this week. And I think
Tom Rhodes Radio Smart Camp.
You want to promo some stuff?
No, I could give you a couple bucks, and we could make it a commercial. I'm kidding.
Tom Rhodes Radio Smart Camp sounds funny. But we have a new sponsor this week, and as you know, Matt Rossimoto.
Oh. the great.
He writes these, but they are real, real commercials. And this one is called Scream Cream Ice Cream Sandwiches. It's been a hot week in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and it really has been, hasn't it, Tom?
Man, wow.
Steve, hot?
Hotter than a duck's ass. I don't know what that means.
And you know what I crave the most at this? Ice cream.
Yeah, and that's our sponsor. It's funny you say that. I mean, it's not that funny.
I'm speaking sincerely.
It's ironic.
I killed a pint of chocolate chip last night.
Yeah, I got to watch it, though, because my doctor says I really have to watch the sugars. But you know when...
He didn't mean in summer, though, did he?
I don't think he meant summer. You know, thank you, Tom, for that. By the way, I am so... I'm such a justifier or rationalizer that I will think that thought that Tom Rhodes said...
Tom Rhodes said it was okay.
You got to have a root beer float in the summer.
Wouldn't it be funny if your doctor's like, look, you got to watch. You might be pre-diabetic. Summer is fine. Eat as much ice cream as you want. Matter of fact, just grab some gummy bears on your way out. Anyway, this is an ad, and thanks, Tom Rhodes, for coming. Scream Cream Ice Cream Sandwiches. It's been a hot week in Los Angeles, and there is no other way to beat the heat than with a delicious ice cream sandwich. Scream Cream is world famous for its delicious ice cream sandwiches. In fact, some say these ice cream sandwiches are too good to be true, as explored in the new Netflix documentary series Scream Makers, which takes you behind the scenes of the dark world of ice cream sandwich manufacturing. From the vanilla cartels of Guatemala to the blood chocolate of the Ivory Coast, this documentary takes you behind the gory curtain of the most delectable summer treat in what TV Guide calls the most violent and horrific expose ever to be televised. Did you know that ice cream has this kind of background?
I may want to give up ice cream after I see this.
I don't think you want to take it that far. It's delicious.
But I didn't know people were being killed in Guatemala and the Ivory Coast.
Yeah, but I still eat it.
Yeah, and he's a vegan.
Why does Netflix do this to me? I can't. I'm keeping money in my mattress because what I learned about the banking system. All these Netflix documentaries are turning me away
from
everything.
They're really taking a lot of fun out of your life.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you should just ignore this one.
Okay.
And enjoy your ice cream. But anyway.
In the summertime.
Right. Filmed over 5 years. They filmed over 5 years. Dedicated filmmakers, these documentary filmmakers, aren't they? Aren't they dedicated, Steve?
I'm not sure, but maybe.
I think they are. They dress very...
It's not a documentary.
It is, you asshole. It's filmed over 5 years. Scream Makers captures not only the mind-curdling terror of ice cream sandwich production, but captures the barbaric, trapping, and torturous deaths of the documentary crew themselves. Netflix's Lisa Nishimura says, "The bloody videotapes were mailed to us by the very people who committed the atrocities. This is not a doc."
See what I said?
This is not a documentary. This is a warning. And what better way to watch that warning than with a delicious Scream Cream ice cream sandwich? Oh boy, are they good.
Wow.
Now let me read that, because
anyway,
I think
folks,
I could do better.
I think the message here is, yes, people are getting murdered in the production of these ice cream sandwiches. However, enjoy it with an ice cream sandwich.
I'm afraid I might give up ice cream after seeing it. I mean, I was going to join a cult in Oregon, and then Netflix just killed that for me.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So I think you got to follow your heart.
I think I got to get rid of Netflix.
That's it.
Maybe you should get rid of Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, but also follow your heart. What were you going to say?
Just get rid of your conscience. That's all you got to
do. Oh, wow. Oh, then I would be American.
Or Republican.
We also, Tom, get calls from people each week. And we have a call. I think we had just one this week. And remember, if you want to leave a comment to me and Steve or one of our guests, the number is 424-262-0904. That's 424-262-0904. And we have a call here, and let's listen to this call.
Hey Eddie Bone, it's your boy Giardo. So I've just been doing a philosophical thing in here. I was watching the other night, Stand By Me. Great film. I hate to spoil it here, but I kind of need to for the point I'm trying to make. There's, at the climax of the film, you know, Kiefer Sutherland's character has a knife to River Phoenix in his neck. And then later on, they say that he died years later as an adult trying to break up a fight, and he gets stabbed in the neck. And I read somewhere online, someone said that was foreshadowing his death. It's kind of an interesting idea that the universe kind of foreshadows your death, but in kind of a logical way, a non-mystical way. I mean, that happens all the time anyway. You know, for instance, my grandmother had colorectal cancer for 7 years, and you know what? That's eventually what killed her. So in a weird way, I mean, everyone probably has enough access to information to realize that they're going to die of a certain thing, unless it's a random thing. But if it's a progressive disease, you know, you're going to have kind of an idea that's how you go out. So I guess this relates more to like an Aggie question too, because I know he's of the Jewish faith. I'm kind of curious if this concept is within your religion, is the idea that the concept of God is so powerful and mystical that he doesn't even have to exist. Is that concept anywhere in the religion? I'm actually genuinely curious about that, like an idea that's so powerful that theoretically it doesn't even have to exist to be useful. You know, it doesn't have to mean, it could be both things, you know, kind of like a light particle and a wave. You know, it can, you know, be a real thing, but also just a construct of our imaginations. I was just curious if like rabbis ever talk about that. So hope that's a good question, and you guys take care. Bye.
Well, that was an interesting phone call, because he went from Stand By Me to the universe foreshadowing your death. And
then is God then, so powerful, does he even need to exist?
And do Jews believe it?
So what, you're our
no,
Jewish
I don't think
expert.
So. First of all, that was the longest call we ever had.
Yes.
I gotta give
interesting
it
call,
that.
Interesting
totally,
call.
Totally,
he referenced Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland, River Phoenix.
Do you know anything about this, Tom?
River Phoenix.
I don't remember.
Stand By Me, I don't remember.
That wasn't in, was River Phoenix in Stand By Me?
Yeah, he was the kid. So I remember vaguely he has the knife to his throat.
Yeah, he's not lying about that.
Yeah.
Or miss.
My favorite scene is when they go to the junkyard and the you realize the one kid's dad was crazy and the guy goes, loony, 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 loony.
I don't remember that.
Kid gets all pissed off and he's trying to climb the fence and they pull
I got
to
rewatch that. Does that hold up?
Yeah.
Great
it's good.
Film,
yeah.
Great film.
But I haven't seen
Stephen
it.
Stephen King wrote that. It's
I know
amazing.
Stephen King wrote that. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
I haven't seen that in years.
But go ahead. So talked about God, what he said at the end, Gardo. Thanks, Gardo, for the call. He called me Eddie Pony, which is hilarious. I must have mentioned that on a podcast. That was the nickname my grandmother gave me. Eddie Pony. I'm a Sicilian. Eddie Pony. She used to call me Eddie Pony because I used to be on a rocking horse, a pony rocking horse.
Yeah.
And this isn't to brag.
See?
This isn't to brag. I know that you folks, your lives, I think they're barren, but it's, I was on a
dying carpet store. Dying on the vine. Dying on the vine.
In your carpet store and your cubicle, drooling on your desk. Now you can't eat ice cream.
But I used to be on a rocking horse all the time, a little pony, and she used to call me Eddie Pony.
That's adorable.
Isn't it?
You need to.
She was the
I
one.
I think that would probably bring you what the Malcolm X tapes do for me.
Yeah,
maybe you need
right?
a
no. That
adult
was his
size rocking.
That was Thomas. His nurturing symbol in his life. Nurturing female.
Yeah,
your grandmother, right?
Yeah, absolutely, my Italian grandmother. But you want to answer this question about God? Like the concept. In other words, the concept itself is so powerful that he doesn't even have to bother showing up. Is that true?
Well, you would think. I mean, if God is all powerful, you know, why do we have to bother him with praying? I mean, if God knows every hair
the
on your head.
Praying is for us.
I think Jim Morrison said.
What did
don't
Morrison
petition,
say?
Don't,
you cannot petition the Lord with prayer. But, you know, he was a fucking moron.
Yeah, he was a moron.
he was, you know, he was a heavy duty alcoholic.
I was really into Morrison when I was younger.
Me too.
When I,
really?
You read any of that poetry now, it's like, oh my God.
Is it horrible?
He's just a pretentious asshole, kind of.
Kind of, I mean, you know, I like, there's still a handful of Doors songs I like. But now I've been to, I'm a big Francophile, and I've been to France, Paris many times, and I used to always have to go to Morrison's grave, man.
Really?
But he's in Père Lachaise Cemetery, and there's so many cooler graves there. Oscar Wilde is buried there. Chopin.
Sylvia Plath?
No, Edith Piaf is there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I was always more into Dylan.
Marcel Proust is there.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome.
I was always more into Dylan, even in college, when I was a young kid. I was Dylan more than...
What's your favorite Dylan song?
Man, that's tough.
God, that's a tough one.
Tomorrow is a long time.
Probably the grains of sand, the every grain of sand. Have you heard that one? Every grain of sand.
Hmm.
It's the one during his religious, he was doing that religious.
The three period. Religious records.
Yeah,
are great.
Which are amazing, which are great.
Lenny Bruce is dead.
Yeah,
you got to serve somebody.
Great song.
It could be a banker, a lawyer, or a cop. It could be a carpet store, linoleum. Linoleum or not.
You said you love Europe. Other favorite places besides Amsterdam?
Amsterdam is amazing, and I need to give you some tips on Amsterdam
before
we wrap up on, on the podcast. But other favorite places? Paris. I'm a big Paris freak. I love everything about Paris and French culture. And I just put out an episode. The podcast episode I put out today is on... it's called Theater of the Absurd, but it's actually about the avant-garde movement of 1885 to World War I, which the painter Henri Rousseau, which I never liked him, but reading this book, The Banquet Years, made me like... People disliked his painting so much they slashed him with knives when he first portrayed him. But there's this guy... who named Alfred Jarry, and he did this famous play called Ubu Roy, and Roy is king, so it would be King Ubu in our translation. So I played this theater in Paris in January called Theatre La Ouvre, and that's where this play happened, which made me want to read about it. So they had no sets because the dialogue is the decor. And the opening line of the play is mad shit. And there was a near 15-minute riot. They had to turn on the house lights. And
profanity? Was
people didn't say shit in public back then. And he was a really interesting guy. He stayed drunk on absinthe. Later in his life, it was ether when he was poor. But he was trying to blend the reality between... being wasted, turning his life into a dreamlike state was what he was trying to do.
On canvas?
No. This is the playwright guy.
The playwright.
Who was friends with with Rousseau. They were from the same little town.
Right.
And this play, Ubu Roy, kind of transformed... it was really... it was this kind of character... was kind of like between a child prodigy and a brat. And so it is really funny sense of humor where like nothing was taken seriously and everything was to be ridiculed. A really interesting guy and influenced everybody. Picasso imitated the guy. The bicycle was a new invention. So this guy used to drive his bike around Paris with a rifle over his shoulder and two pistols in his belt.
What's his name again?
Alfred Jarry.
Oh, Jarry. Have you ever heard of Jarry?
I know the name, but yeah. I don't know his name.
So the episode of my podcast I just put out today.
What's the name of your podcast again?
Tom Rhodes Radio Smart Camp.
Okay.
So I try and educate people. I did an episode on, I did a three-part series on the French Revolution. Really great stuff, man. Danton, my favorite character from the French Revolution, when he gets sent to the guillotine, he stepped up onto the scaffolding and he told the executioner, "Be sure to hold my head up for the people. It's well worth seeing." If you're going to get your head cut off, you got to say something.
I hope I go like that. I hope I go like that if I have the balls to do that, because I think there's going to be bloodshed here.
I think we're... Well, it's funny. The thing about the French Revolution is like, oh, wow, could you imagine one political group hating another so much that they would chop the heads off?
Well, here it is.
And here we are. So, there's... interesting things to ponder. I did another episode on Mark Twain's worldwide comedy tour.
I know a little bit.
He did
about
after
that.
He declared bankruptcy,
really,
to get out of debt. And I think Mark Twain invented modern stand-up comedy.
When was that? When
it was 1890s.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's around the same time as Alfred Jarry put on that play in 1896.
It predates vaudeville, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Twain, as Tom said, went bankrupt. He had a kind of tragic life. He lost a couple of siblings.
His brother died on a Mississippi River boat. He was supposed to be on the boat, and he got off, and then there was a fire, and his brother died. That was the first tragedy. And then he had a he was really, really bad with his investments. He invested in this typeset machine that broke him and all these other things. He had a chance to invest in the very first telephone. And he said, who would use it? Just me and the president.
Gosh, that's
so he could have made a fortune off the telephone, but he didn't.
So genius who was a fucking idiot. That's the greatest.
So, genius and then, who was a fucking idiot.
And then he had three daughters, and Livy, the most oldest one, was the most popular, and she was beautiful, and guys liked her. And then she had another daughter who was an epileptic, and they they tried all these different treatments. They took her to Sweden. They had money. They could do what they did all these things, and nothing. And it was all like, you know, terrible treatments, like putting people under ice cold water, and just it was hellish. And they're paying, and it couldn't cure her. And then she ended up dying while he was on this worldwide comedy tour. So the guy's life was full of tragedy.
Full of tragedy, and it is amazing that, you know, he's one of the... Is he considered America's...
He's considered a humorist, that's for sure.
The best comedy author. Award is the Mark Twain Award.
Yeah, oh, I didn't even... I forgot about that. Yeah. And like Tom said, he's kind of the first stand-up comedy.
He invented stand-up comedy.
Out of necessity. He had to go around the country.
He actually hated performing. But the thing about him was he would hone it like a stand-up comedian. So he would run the material, and then he would drop lines that didn't work. He was constantly like trying to punch it up and make it better. And this book that I read about his worldwide comedy tour that I did the podcast about, his wife actually told him, do the story about from Tom Sawyer about when he's with the runaway slave on the boat. And they stop, and the Jim is hiding in the bushes, and there all these guys are looking for runaway Jim, and he says that he doesn't see him, or all this stuff, and he lies, but his it's this conflicted moment for Tom Sawyer where he's like, he doesn't have anything against the woman who owns this slave, and why was he doing this? But he felt that it was the right thing to do. So that was the story that made everyone's heart melt from Australia to India to England and Paris and everywhere they went. Mm-hmm. And it was his wife who told him, make sure you tell that fucking story in the middle.
Jesus.
Cut out that.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to listen to a wife, man.
Yeah, my wife
Mickey,
helps me with my stand-up, too.
Walt Disney originally wanted to call Mickey Mouse Mortimer Mouse. and his wife said, no, that's fucking stupid. So
the wives are so integrally involved in.
Well, they also know you so well, and they have enough distance from the material. Like I can't see, can't see things clearly because of you know. It's you're so involved in your shit that you're like, but they know it. They know you. They know the material. And this is a good time for an ad.
That would be great. I think Mark Twain invented stand-up comedy as we know it. I think Oscar Wilde is also in there, but he didn't give live performances. He was hilarious with the lines
with company, right?
Yeah, but he didn't actually do it on a stage. So that's why I think Mark Twain is.
Well, you know what, Mark Twain, and who else did you mention? Mark Twain,
Oscar Wilde,
and now I'd like to talk about another guy who's incredible. The Lost Book of L. Ron Hubbard. That's right. Scientology has had a lot of criticism throughout the years, and I'm not going to say it isn't deserved, Florida, right? But The Lost Book of L. Ron Hubbard is a masterpiece. The New York Times calls it the most important book of our age. Get your copy of L. Ron Hubbard's definitive guide to proper dishwasher loading and maintenance today. The definitive guide covers everything from top rack stacking to tandem bowl lineup. Did you know that the fork up versus fork down argument is the number three cause of divorce in America? Probably didn't. Scientology chairman David Miscavige says, I finally understand all that bullshit about going clear. It was about spots. It was always about spots.
Well, Macbeth was about spots, wasn't it? Out damn spot.
I don't know, but
or spot come here. That's what I said.
Didn't he say out vile jelly? Wasn't that what he said?
No, that's a porn.
The Wall Street Journal says the bit on pre-washing my new mind and sweet holy fuck. Did you read the chapter on lemon juice? Pat Robertson, Christian Evangelical, says, you would think if Jesus were really the Son of God, he would have covered pods and powders. I feel as if my whole life was a sham. Order L. Ron Hubbard's Definitive Guide to Proper Dishwasher Loading and Maintenance, the most pivotal book in all of human history.
I can't believe you guys have Scientology commercials, man.
That's our first one. No.
Well, we're getting endorsed.
I've only had a couple commercials on my podcast. Maybe I need to. I don't know.
Yeah, more? You need.
I need to get rid of the intelligent
content. By the way, I like what you're doing. That sounds awesome. I love that you're doing.
Because when I was traveling around the world, you know, I didn't live anywhere for 10 years. Put everything in storage. Traveled the world for 10 years, and my podcast then was I was interviewing people, mostly comedians around the world, you know, as I traveled and did a lot of great people. But I mean, I did like Steve Wozniak. I did Kim.com when I was in New Zealand. I did a lot of great worldwide comedians. And then when I moved to L.A., I thought, you know, every comedian in L.A. is talking to other comedians. So let me just talk about things that I'm really interested in.
That's cool.
So, like, when I'm, you know, I'm constantly reading books and I'm all about the knowledge. So, try to.
I love that. I mean, I love just hearing about, because I love, I can't believe I haven't been to Paris yet.
I can't believe you haven't either.
And my favorite author in the whole world was born in Brooklyn. He was born in Brooklyn. His name is Henry Miller.
Henry Miller, come on now. I love Henry Miller.
Yeah, me too. And most people think of Miller, sex. All they think about is, he wrote a lot about sex because his Tropic of Cancer got banned.
Yeah. Well, I like my favorite Henry Miller, and I am a Henry Miller freak. I'm so glad you bring this up.
Well, we're simpatico, baby.
Yeah, my favorite Henry Miller. And I tell people, don't start with Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn. The Rosy Crucifixion trilogy.
Oh, I love the Rosy
Nexus,
Crucifixion.
Sexus, and Plexus. And of those, Sexus is my favorite. And he does talk about what he did with his dick for 10 pages.
Yes.
But then he'll drop the most, the most profound observations of human existence. After he talks about his dick for 10 minutes.
Well, you have to talk about your dick for 10 minutes in order to get that out of the way.
He's in Paris in the 20s, and he wasn't, he wasn't making any money, and he had, he had friends every night of the week that would feed him dinner. So he would go. So he had a schedule every night, like Tuesday, I'm going to
Eddie's. He had a hustle. He didn't have money, and I love him because he is, first of all, he's from Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. And he fucking scrapped his way to being an unbelievable author. And like Tom said, he would, you know, he got known for kind of like sexual, like he was very explicit with his, you know, sexual dalliances. But then he would just talk incredibly philosophically or insightfully about the world, the universe. It was just fucking great.
One of my favorite writers of all time. And then the Colossus of Marussi is one of my favorite books, which is about this period he spent in Greece.
Have you been to Greece?
I've been to Greece many times, yeah. I've been to the Island of Rhodes because it's got my fucking name. I swam naked at the entrance of Rhodes Harbor where the Colossus of Rhodes once stood. It was when I lived in Amsterdam. When I lived in Amsterdam for those 5 years, I would try and take as many trips around Europe as I could. Like Spain is a 2-hour flight. To take the train to Paris is only 3 hours. So Greece is a 3-hour flight from Amsterdam. Mm. And I've been to Santorini, Mykonos, been to Athens.
I hear Mykonos is amazing.
It's nice. I like Santorini better. This little town on top of the hill is called Ia. And you've seen it a million times in postcards where it's this on top of a mountain and it's all these like white domes and blue domed
Oh, yeah.
Things, and you can see the sea in the distance. That's Ea. It's this famous postcard shot. But the island of Rhodes is supposed to be the Florida of Europe, but I'm from Florida. I don't have a problem with Florida. I think the island of Rhodes is amazing. It's a fortress city built 300 years before Christ. The oldest synagogue in Europe is in within the fortress. It's an amazing place.
He talked about great. You don't know Miller, right? You don't know Henry Miller.
No, I read the Tropic of Cancer, and I know he was married to Anais Nin. Right?
No, they
wasn't
weren't
married. Or they were just fucking.
They were fucking.
They were fucking, and she was a total literary.
She was married to another guy.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she was crazy. I mean, she was a wild sex.
She wasn't crazy. She was a super intelligent
woman. She was wild.
Who was, that's the luxury of people living in Paris in the 20s. That she could be free sexually and not be ostracized for it, like women who were in the United States at that period. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the way Henry Miller, I wouldn't say he was a mentor. I would say he was more of an equal. And that was the attraction between them was because... You know, he was fucking his brains out, which is cool because he was a bald guy.
I love that.
The fact that he was a
bald guy from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Bald guys from Brooklyn.
And he felt that she was his intellectual equal. And she was super smart. I feel bad for her husband, but she wasn't, there wasn't anything wrong with what she was doing. She wrote freely like Henry Dillard.
Great.
Like
it's
other
great.
Men did.
What was her famous book I read? The House of...
Little Birds.
Was it Little Birds?
Yeah. Poetry.
You know the book I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. Anais Nin, House of maybe Little Birds. I don't know. Not the poetry. It was just
short stories. Short stories.
It was erotica, and it was the first time like I read erotica, you know, and I read it out loud to in the New York subway. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to now have you.
Did you put a hat out for money?
Yeah, of course.
And fill that motherfucker.
I'm so glad you like Henry Miller. That makes me so.
Dude,
happy.
That's one of my all-time favorites. My all-time favorite.
You should come by my apartment and see my Henry Miller shelf.
We have to wrap up. Tell me.
Oh my God.
Give me a couple of tips.
Amsterdam. All right. So you're going to be staying. Right across the street from Tumler. So the Amsterdam Hilton is where John Lennon and Yoko Ono did the Love Inn in 1969. It's also where Herman Brood committed suicide by jumping off. Herman Brood was the Lou Reed of Dutch music. He was like
love it. Lou Reed,
rock,
my favorite
cool
musician.
And one of mine as well. So where that is, when you come out of there, you're going to be staying, I think it's called the Bilderberg Hotel where you'll be staying. And you can walk straight. It's like three blocks straight over to Vondelpark. And you come out.
Oh, I've been to Vondel,
come out right in the center. And that Vondelpark in summer is
so
the
nice.
Best place in Amsterdam.
It is cool.
And it's just so great. And it's, it's the weather's bad there for 8 months out of the year. So
is it?
It's rainy and cold for most of the year, yeah. So in the summer.
That's why your wife loves California.
Perhaps, yeah.
Perhaps,
but,
Tom?
There's a Japanese tea garden where you can have tea in there, but it's such a great place. I would recommend renting a bicycle and riding around Vondelpark. But then very close to there is Museum Plein. In Holland, a plein is a square. So it's Museum Square. There's the Van Gogh Museum, and then there's the Rijksmuseum where they have all the Golden Age Dutch masters paintings like Rembrandt's Night Watch.
Yeah, yeah.
But so you can ride your bike from where you're at, staying there around Vondelpark, or over to Museum Plein, and then through the bottom of the Rijksmuseum is a tunnel for bicycles. And you can ride your bike straight through this tunnel of the Rijksmuseum, and then you come out straight onto Spiegelstraat if you keep going straight. And that is probably my favorite street in Amsterdam.
Spiegelstraat.
And it's
by the
all
way, if you're listening from a carpet store, Spiegelstraat
it's,
is equivalent to a really nice warehouse.
It's art galleries, and it's just there's a Soup and Zo, this place that has incredible soups. And it's one of my biggest thrills to ride a bike through that tunnel, and then you come out on Spiegelstraat, and there's canals along the way, and it's absolutely wonderful. See who is on at the Paradiso. The Paradiso is a 14th century church, which is now a concert venue and nightclub. And nights when there's not concerts, it's a pretty great dance club. And it's in a 14th century church.
That must be the left-wing Christians.
Everybody has played there.
The green Christians.
I saw Jane's Addiction there, India Arie, Tool. The Rolling Stones have played there. It's like it's this – and it's a short walk from where you're at.
Awesome.
So that's great. Do not take the tourist boat tour of Amsterdam. Find a Dutch friend who will take you on their own little personal boat. And then you go to Albert Heijn, which is the grocery store, and get some cheeses and some strawberries and some sparkling water, whatever you like. And hopefully someone will like you enough to take you out onto the canals. There was one year when I was playing it. See, and the Amsterdam Hilton is right on this fabulous canal. And that's Amsterdam South, which is like kind of the wealthy area of Amsterdam. But the Dutch woman that I fell in love with when I met her, one of the reasons I fell in love with her, she took me out on a boat for the afternoon with cheeses and strawberries and, you know, whatever. And we spent the day on the canals, and we were running late, and she took me straight to the backside of the Amsterdam Hilton so I could make it to my show in time, which was really cool to step off
That's
of a boat and then
cool.
go right to the thing. Another thing you should check out, and it's another reason that made me fall in love with the Netherlands, is this thing, and if your timing is right, it'll be on, and it's called the Parade, spelled like parade. I think the website would be parade.nl, and it's the most incredible thing. It's all these little tents, and the shows are all, there's these little performances going on in all these tents. They take over this park, and I think it's John F. Kennedy Plein, where they do this in Amsterdam every year. But it tours all over the Netherlands, and it's 1 week in every city, in Groningen and Utrecht and Rotterdam. And it's one of my favorite things in the Netherlands, and it's so Dutch.
What's it called again?
It's called the Parade.
Okay.
It's called the Parade. Mm-hmm. So parade.nl, or just Google Parade Holland. Mm-hmm. And it's these wacky performances, and they only – so there's you have outdoor bars and outdoor little food stands, but there's like, I would say, 30 to 50 little tents where you don't know what's going on in there. And you get like, you pay for like these tickets to go to the shows, and the tickets are only like 50 cents each. And you can go into one, and it might be like the weirdest thing, some Dutch guy just smashing pies into his face or while riding a unicycle, or you could see like some really great. And these little performances are only like 5 or 10 minutes long. But you never know what the performance is going to be.
This is their comedy store showcases, basically.
Basically. Yeah. And then it was the first time I had ever seen the silent disco where the people, everyone's got their own headphones
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard
now,
that.
Now you see that at festivals everywhere. Right. But I saw it 20 years ago there. Mm-hmm. For the first time. That is pretty amazing. And, okay, let me tell you this. one of my favorite things in Amsterdam is the Children's Museum. It's called the Tropen Museum. And you can take the number 9 tram. It's out by the zoo. The zoo is pretty. 3 o'clock is feeding time at the zoo. And if you're standing in front of the lions at 3 o'clock, it's pretty thrilling to watch the lions ripping raw meat apart with their teeth. That's actually where I was standing on September 11th.
A little symbolic,
yeah.
No?
Yeah, exactly. So the Tropen Museum is like a block from there, and it's a children's museum, but it's all about the rest of the world. And this is it's such a it shows you the Dutch Enlightenment and how progressive they are. Where it's all about, because they colonized people all over the world in Indonesia and. And there's an art photo exhibit, but it's this really cool place about the rest of the world, and they're very honest about their history with the rest of the world. And the last tip I will give you, which a lot of people don't know about, and I always tell people to do this, it's in the red light district. The red light district is in the center of town, so there's no way to avoid it.
Right.
The Amsterdam is shaped like half a pizza. And so they sealed off the ocean, but it used to be the river there went to the ocean. So
the Amstel.
No, it's called the Eye.
Oh, I thought it was the Amstel.
The Amstel is on the other side of town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But this is the Eye, okay, which is behind Central Station, the train station. So the sailors would all come in there, and that's the red light district is the oldest part of town.
Ah.
There's a place there. This is my tip. It's called the Church in the Attic.
Mm.
And so it's the oldest part of town. At one time in the Netherlands, Catholicism was illegal. These people built their own private Catholic church in their attic. And it's on the edge of the red light district. And it's pretty amazing. Whenever they did this, I don't know, 1500, something like that. But it's called, it just Google Church in the Attic, Amsterdam. I mean, and it's
in parade or parade.
Yeah, in parade. I highly recommend those. If you were there in April, I would tell you to go to Kokenhof, which is where the all the tulips are displayed.
Mm.
If you ever go, and that's a must. And you take the train to Leiden, and then as you're taking the train, you just pass these fields where it's like of tulips, where like it's yellow tulip field, red tulip field, purple. So taking the train past all
sounds
these
like
fields
a mescaline,
of tulips.
Organic mescaline
yeah.
trip.
And then there's all these arrangements of tulips at Kokenhof. It's pretty amazing.
So amazing. Well, you know, that's a great – what you just did is, for anybody listening, a great fucking Amsterdam
I think this
travelogue.
Episode yeah. should be actually well, inside what, tips
yeah,
to Amsterdam
yeah,
because
awesome.
Anybody who's going to visit there now.
Okay, can I tell you one last thing? It's not a tip, but I find the I love Dutch people. They're very progressive. You'll find yourself having intelligent conversations with everyone. And everyone is enlightened. Very rarely will you meet just an absolute pinhead in the Netherlands. But, have bitterballen. It's this bar treat. They have it at Tumler, every bar in the Netherlands. And it's hard to describe, but it's fried gravy balls. And you dip it in this like Dijon hot mustard, and it's orgasmic. They're
really?
So friggin' good.
He's a vegan, though, so he might have
Are you really?
Some issues. Yeah,
you could make an exception.
Yeah. Well, they don't torture the animals the same in Europe
right,
as they
right,
do
right.
here.
Oh, well, anyway. So, but here's my the last thing I wanted to tell you. I know so many things about, you know, and my late night talk show that I had in Amsterdam, I was a foreigner experiencing Dutch culture. So everything was taught to me. Everything was explained to me. And there's this Dutch word called hazelik, and that describes all of Dutch culture. It's what they're looking for, and it's the way everything... Hazelik, they say, is there's no English equivalent for hazelik, but I think it's bullshit. Hazelik is somewhere cozy that you're in no hurry to leave.
Love that.
And that is Dutch society is, oh, it's hazelik. But here's the funny thing I wanted to tell you. Dutch people do this, and whenever I'm there, I'll throw this out on stage whenever I can. But whenever a Dutch person is disappointed with something, they say, helaas, pindakaas.
Which means?
It's a Dutch expression, and they all say it when something bad happens or they're disappointed. And the literal translation is, it's a pity, peanut butter.
It's a pity.
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter.
What
the fuck?
Helaas, pindakaas.
Helaas.
You know what? You've convinced me. I'm moving back to the Netherlands.
I know, yeah. man.
Why did I ever fucking leave there?
I'm telling you, I'm listening to this going, what the fuck am I doing?
I loved it. I had a bike when I lived there. I had a number of bikes, but, you know, just it's such a great, wonderful place.
Well, thank you, Tom Rhodes. And I want to say a couple of things, and we want to promote Tom's podcast, which is called what again, Tom?
Tom Rhodes Radio Smart Camp. It's everywhere.
And obviously, that's a good listen. So if you like pep talks, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Or if you're watching us on Facebook and like what you see, tell a friend. If you listen to us on SoundCloud, I guess you can click the little heart icon. What is it, 5 seconds out of your day? It's just literally pressing a button.
this commercial is about halfway in, so obviously you like this garbage or you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. Okay, the iTunes thing is a bit more intensive. You have to decide how many stars to rate us. Quick hint. The number is all of them, and I know you feel like you're on the spot for something to say, so just smash the keyboard until you fill the page with letters. Who cares? Facebook user, those quote-unquote friends who are following you are all bots, so asking them to watch a video isn't going to ruin the world. You might have to ask in Russian, but they'll eventually check it out. The more you rate our show, the more sponsors we get. It's not like Roo Cheese and Face Bags comes from the ayahuasca-fueled fever dreams of an unemployed degenerate. All right, everybody. Steve, so I'll be at Tumler's August.
Who are you doing Tumler with?
I'm not sure.
The guy Stefan Pop, who runs it, is great.
Yeah,
I wonderful
know.
Guy.
I know. Stefan is the guy who booked me, and I love Stefan. And I will be there
August
8, 9, 10.
August.
11 in Amsterdam, Tumler's. Then I'm going to be doing the Altercation Comedy Festival in Austin in September 27th. You got any gigs you want to...
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be in West Nyack, New York, coming up. I think it's Levity Live, I think it's called. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm going to be in Addison, Texas, Dallas at the Improv. I'm going to be doing this is all in a few months from now.
Go to your website.
Atlanta, Punchline, TomRhodes.net. Next month, I'm going to do Shanghai, Beijing, and Mongolia. I'm going back to Mongolia. I love
Theo Vaughn, who I was just talking to, just came back from Shanghai. He loved it.
Yeah, Shanghai is probably my favorite city in Asia. And then I did Mongolia last September, and it was already in the 30s. I loved it so much. I read Genghis Khan's biography before I went there.
Is it Genghis? I thought it was Genghis.
They pronounce it Genghis.
They pronounce it Genghis. Yeah.
So, and I want to experience it in the summer. So, actually the week after you're in Tumler, I'll be in Mongolia.
Oh, cool. I was in the Mongolian Chuckle Hut, and I'm kidding. Mongolian ha-has. What the fuck are the crowds like in Mongolia? Dude?
They're all Mongolian. A lot of times you play... What when I play in Asia, like? It's like half the audience will be, you know, if you're in China, it'll be half Chinese and then half expats. In Japan, it's half Japanese, half... I'm going back to Tokyo.
But people speak enough English, obviously.
They all speak English. I mean, not all of them, but right. I mean, the comedy club sat 100 people. It was the same size as Tumler, you know? And they were English-speaking Mongolians, people who have been educated in other countries or whatever. And
you just do your material.
Yeah, well, I said I had a great opening. I said, apparently everyone in the world is somehow related to Genghis Khan, so I'm just here to visit family. Hello, cousins. And I said I read Genghis Khan's biography before I came here. And under the rule of Genghis Khan, no individual was ever held responsible for a mistake or an error. It was the community's fault as a whole. So if this show doesn't go good tonight, it's all of our fault. Right, I'll tell you one more. This is what I opened with, Mongolia. So reading Genghis Khan's biography, I learned that as a comedian playing in Mongolia, you never give up on a joke, never give up on a story. And if that doesn't work, you can always put aristocrats and noblemen into catapults and shoot them against the palace walls because that never fails to make the Mongolians laugh.
Oh, man. Well, Tom, thank you. I mean, you've covered the world for us from Mongolia to Amsterdam.
Paris.
Yeah. It's been awesome. Steve.
Eddie's going to be in Amsterdam. Tom's going to be in Mongolia.
Where are you going to be?
I'll be in El Monte. El Monte, August 7th at the Silver Dollar Saloon. Come on out and check me out.
Yeah, baby. Eddie, I have so much respect for you. I love you dearly. And
I love you too,
I'm
man.
I'm thrilled to be on the program.
The what?
I'm thrilled to be
yes!
on your program.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you. That was great.
Yeah.
I I'm really looking forward
and
to it.
And I like you too.
Thank you, Tom.
You can call me Tom.
That was an honor. I don't feel right calling any grown man Tommy.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.